Give me 2 eggs. So tomorrow I got nothing.
Do you believe that everybody should be born poor? 1 week of their life. 1 week.
As you see, I'm in a wheelchair. I was hit by a train 10 years ago. And a year ago, I was hit by a truck.
There's a feeling in the pit of your stomach the first several nights that you're out there when you realize you actually are in a place where you got nowhere to go.
How do you like being at the shelter?
Kind of good. And I like it when we had our own bed, different. And when we get our new house, I'll be so happy when I have my own room.
This may surprise a lot of people, but in the last school year, all of our schools here in Butte County, there's 14 different school districts, identified about 900 students, children and youth who were in homeless situations during the course of the school year.
Welcome to the Without a Roof program, where we expose and remedy poverty, the worst form of violence. Guillermo Mash welcoming you to the March 19th Without a Roof Radio program. Hopefully everyone had a safe and enjoyable St. Patrick's Day 2018. A couple of shout-outs. This one's going out to Katie, who sent me a nice little message. It said, I've always wanted to tell you I love your show Without a Roof. It's really well done. My fiancé was homeless for many years, and I can't believe some of the rough conditions people attempt to exist under, and to be criminalized on top of it is such a cruel endeavor. You try and keep getting up day after day. You bring so much hope, advocacy, and voice to so many people who need a voice. Bravo. Thank you, Katie, and the rest of the listeners. Another shout out, man. Kyle. Kyle, I know you listen to the show, man. Your brother wants you to call him, man. Your brother in Florida, he's worried about you. So good show today, as every show is, I hope. I hope you guys are the judge of that. I actually have a wonderful interview with Angela McLaughlin. You can't have conversations without the other side. And we're gonna run with that right off the top. After that, I have an interview with Eric, who's been on the radio a couple of times, partner of Gail. But he has some really strong words around criminalization and harassment and, you know, what his current status is as far as a criminal justice system for the heinous crime of having a shopping cart and then failing to appear in court. But my favorite piece to produce and film, I did a film, I strung it to chicosoul.org. Shout out to my friends over there at Chico Soul. But Justice for Desmond Phillips, man. They had a wonderful remembrance of life for him this past Saturday, St. Patrick's Day. He was killed St. Patrick's Day of 2017 in an officer-involved shooting. But there was tons of food left over at the end. And what was amazing was we decided to give the food out to the plaza. That wasn't amazing. That's what we do. But as it happens, I went with Scott Rushing and we couldn't find his car. And I'm walking around with 10 pounds worth of food. And we ended up walking down the same alley where Discovery Thrift Store is. And he noticed and he kind of tensed up that was the same alley his son, one of the last alleys he was seen alive in before the shooting earlier in the day. But the bottom line is Scott Rushing was so distraught, just, you know, reliving the whole thing and the whole energy and power of the Desmond Phillips remembrance. So he went over to the houseless community and he gave out food. And to be able to be there to bear witness for how much burden was lifted from his shoulder to, you know, fellowship with these folks. And, you know, I introduced him, rightly so. People came up and hugged him and there was a bunch of conversations. But at least for that brief moment, I saw a lot of the tension and a lot of the grief removed from Scott Rushing's shoulders. And that gave me a lot of joy. So I hope everyone will enjoy the three-part show today before talking about practice. Hello, coming up 5:30. But as always, if you have a roof, be grateful. You Can't Have Conversations Without the Other Side by Angela McLaughlin. You'd never have guessed he'd been released from San Quentin earlier in the day. Pretty average looking, maybe early to mid-30s, polite and friendly, though clearly stressed. This was winter of 2016, and I was doing intake at Safe Space Winter Shelter in Chico. He hadn't been at the shelter before, so I signed him in and did his paperwork. His story emerged as we filled out the intake forms. He'd been released that morning drug offense, didn't say much else, didn't justify or deny. He'd been cut loose with enough money for a bus ticket to Chico and was expected to report to his parole officer on Monday. He wasn't originally from Chico, but had been living there with his wife at the time of his arrest. They'd divorced while he was in prison and she'd long ago moved, so he no longer had any connection to the area. Some vagary of the justice system dictated he return. His paperwork was loose, not in a binder or even a trash bag. Everything he was required to take to his parole officer on Monday was literally in a 3 to 4 inch stack of loose paperwork that he struggled to keep together. He had nothing else except the clothes on his back and a few bucks left over after bus fare. Mind you, he'd been released on Friday. So here he was, washed up in a town where he had no connections in the middle of winter without so much as a coat or even a bag to carry the papers. I was outraged. I remained outraged. We found a backpack for him in the shelter, scarred up a coat, and he was gone by my next shift. I don't know what happened to him, but I've wondered about him many times. Whatever you think about crime and criminals, how we prosecute nonviolent crimes and drug offenses, the ethics of a for-profit prison system, rehabilitation versus punishment, and Lord knows there's a lot to unpack and discuss there, surely we can all agree this particular outcome is a recipe for disaster.
There is much to say about all of that, but I'll leave it there because I'm headed towards something else. I'd never have known any of this, would never have bumped up against this possibility if I hadn't been involved with Safe Space. I'm not going to harangue you further about getting involved, but the story serves to illustrate a broader point. I'm as stereotypically white, middle-aged, and middle-class as can be. Nowhere in my usual well-trodden path would I have encountered this man, and even if I had, it's unlikely I'd have spent time with him or heard his story. It's valuable to engage with the other, especially for those of us who hold power, and there is much to be gained by brushing up against people in situations so different from our own, for them and perhaps even more so for us. These types of encounters temper our judgments, enlighten us, and broaden our perspectives. They're an opportunity to recognize and reflect on our shared humanity. They're just plain good for our souls. These opportunities to meet each other, with all the friction that sometimes entails, get lost in the push to force the undesirables out of downtown and away from stores, to make them less visible or drive them out of Chico altogether. We may well succeed in getting them out of sight, but doing so won't resolve the essential issues, only diminish the breadth of our perspective on them. Like most of you, I want to see my country, state, and community live up to our shared ideals. There's so much we can't control, but we can do better locally. It starts with having these conversations, and that can only happen if we literally see each other and if we engage. Our conversations need to include, rather than just be about, those who are less fortunate. They need to include those who are struggling with addiction, who are dirty and unkempt, who were just released from prison, who made dumb mistakes. If we don't find a way to incorporate their perspectives, we will not only all be more impoverished for it, but real, lasting solutions will continue to elude us.
All right, that was a beautiful dual reading of Angela McLaughlin's piece. Her latest piece from North State Voices titled You Can't Have Conversations Without the Other Side. And to have a conversation right now in the studio with Guillermo, we have the author of that piece, Angela McLaughlin. Welcome to KZFR, Angela.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, we're really happy to have you. Why don't you introduce yourself and tell us what you'd like our listeners to know about Angela McLaughlin?
I've been in the North State for, gosh, most of my life. We moved up here when I was about 5. I work in the tech industry, and so I work with I work with small businesses, and so I work with a really broad variety of folks. And so I've become interested in how we can better connect people, and it's one of my focuses this year.
Why don't you tell us just a bit about North State Voices and, you know, where people can find your work?
North State Voices is a contest that the ER has annually. I'm not sure how long it's been going on, but they accept submissions, I think in November, and then make a decision in December. They have a panel that reads submissions, and they select 4 people. And so you get a column every 4 weeks. It rotates, and so I'll have, I think, 10 more columns this year, and I don't have the specific dates for those.
Is that when you started this, your blogging post, your blogging site, I should say, the out-beyond.com?
Yeah, actually, David Little, the editor over at the ER, suggested that I come up with an email address where people could contact me. And I work in tech, so I didn't want to use my business address. And so I went ahead and just set up the blog.
Nice. And by looking on your blog site, once again, that's out-beyond.com, seems like you've written three articles or essays in your column, correct?
Yeah, three cool. So far.
Nice. So we're here to talk about you can't have conversations without the other side. I was really interested maybe to look through your article to maybe revisit your outrage. You know, and as I read this, you were outraged then and you remain outraged now. Why don't we dig in a little bit on that?
You know, you hear things about people being released from prison without much or without much support. It just doesn't have the same impact until you actually connect with it. I mean, I was shocked, absolutely shocked. I mean, the poor man was like in sweatpants and a really dingy, you know, obviously long washed white sweatshirt, and that was all he had. It was the middle of winter. It was really cold. It was raining that weekend. I don't even see how he was supposed to get his paperwork to his parole officer on Monday. I mean, I just had never been confronted with the reality of the situation. And it is different when you see it. It's not theoretical. And I think that's part of the point that I tried to make with some of my writing is until you have an encounter with somebody, I don't think it hits home the same way.
So you think your combination of outrage had to do with how ludicrous the situation was and the actual place it had placed this gentleman? Is that a good way to kind of...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, the whole situation of sending people out, I don't know how we have any successful outcomes if that's how we release people from prison. I mean, unless you have a family to go to or a specific place waiting for you, I mean, it's almost unimaginable how... Mm-hmm. We expect this to end well.
Yeah, one thing to add to that is, you know, the authoritarian police spin on this, and actually it's real, because I had someone that was here at the station, Peter Ratner, maybe somewhere around a similar time, he had come to me with this type of wording for a story like that. A felon was dumped by bus in the middle of the night into downtown Chico.
That's very much the narrative right now. And of course it's correct. It's a correct statement. It just doesn't encompass, right. It just doesn't address the realities of the situation. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how we shift that narrative. And that's part of what I've been thinking about this year with this writing project is, I don't know how we're so far apart on this. It's crazy. I work with a lot of folks. You know, we live in an area that's fairly conservative. I work with a lot of conservative folks. I have a lot of people that I work with that I know are very much on the other side of the fence from me. And I have a lot of people, though, that I really like, care about, respect, and they're just decent humans. And so it gets hard to write it off. It gets hard to write off their opinions when I know them. But on the other hand, I mean, I've been shocked sometimes by, you know, I have one client that felt free to send me comics depicting the Obamas as apes. And I was flabbergasted by that. This is somebody that I've known for over 10 years. I would bet that he would go get money out of his savings account tomorrow if I needed it. I mean, he's really salt of the earth, nice guy. I'm having trouble aligning these things.
It is difficult. I actually had blocked one person and defriended the spouse for almost exactly the same thing. It wasn't just that one thing. They were clearly racist, abject racist, and I just couldn't have that, you know, physically in the space I was in. I don't think we do enough to call that out. You know, if you know someone that's a racist, you kind of go, well, I'll deal with it in a certain way, but we can't really, you know, address the underlying issue of, you know, racism and the way people are stereotyped.
Yeah.
But you made a comment about, you know, you don't know how to change the narrative. What I was really interested to bring you on, Angela, because you are changing the narrative, because the way to change the narrative is to come up with our own narrative. You know, I've been doing this work now for 6 years, creating narratives, but we spend way too much time jumping into, you know, the authoritarian police state narrative, trying to quote unquote help educate them. And what the reality is, as I see, and I spent a couple of weeks, I don't usually go out on these Facebook groups, seriously. People know that. I'm like, I got better things to do, and it's too caustic. I spent 2 weeks doing it, And I announced it on air, and I'm like, I'm not going to these groups anymore. Because you're not really educating anyone. All I want to do is come back with caustic responses. But from a framing perspective, Angela, this is a question. I'll pose this question. They want to make the people that are listening think that they're listening to a real argument where we don't really know what to do, when in fact it's really clear. You know, if someone doesn't have shelter, they need shelter. What would you say to that?
Yeah, you know the environment online in particular, but everywhere in town, is just incredibly toxic. I don't know what the answer is either. I felt some obligation to show up in those forums mm-hmm. because I feel like the narrative is so out of control that I worry about it, and this will be poo-pooed by a lot of those folks. But I really worry about us having some kind of vigilante action. It's just gotten so ugly, and it's just a consistent kind of drumbeat of blaming. I mean, it's to the point of parody. You know, I have a bad hair day. Oh, my God, the homeless. You know, it's just out of control. And so I try to show up in those forums and try to provide an alternate narrative. You're probably right. I don't think it's making a bit of difference. I just don't know what else to do. I mean, we do need to change hearts and minds. I'm not ready to write those folks off completely yet. If we want change, we have to have some of them soften their stance at least. I'm not sure how to do it.
Listeners just joining, Angela McLaughlin is our interview topic here. Not the interview topic. She is the author of a wonderful piece called You Can't Have Conversations Without the Other Side, North State Voices. So you had said in this article that just, you know, posted, I remained outraged. So that's real current and present language. You know, how does your outrage linger, and what are you doing about it?
Well, I think a lot of what I'm doing about it is just writing this year and trying to show up. I mean, I'm trying to show up, I guess, and I don't want to simplify it as much as the other side spaces, but I'm trying to make an effort to be present in places that I wouldn't necessarily be present normally. And that means, you know, going to the Chico First booth and introducing myself and trying to get to know some of those folks. And it means this writing. I'm just really trying to figure out if there's any way, and this may all just be pointless. So far, I can't say I've built any bridges. It seems like the folks that my writing appeals to are the folks that it already would have appealed to. But my hope this year, and I'm trying to channel that outrage into outreach and figuring out where I can make a difference. And like I said, I'd love to see the stance of the folks that want the homeless out of sight to be softened. I mean, ultimately, I don't think we're going to accomplish prison reform, meaningful justice reform in Chico. But again, I'd like to see the stance softened on that. Because if we can get people, maybe it's a framing issue.
I kind of made it into a fishing issue, Angela, on my show. And I'm like, when I was telling people I'm not going out on these groups anymore, and I put an analogy of fishing, because of course with the pushback, well, that's not fair. You know, there are people that, you know, have, you know, this or have that opinion. I use the fishing analogy. I'm like, well, if I'm looking for people that are going to inspire and mold and action things to help these folks and to help our community, the first place I would go fishing would not be Chico First or Chico Community Watch or Rants and Raves. There's a lot of better places to look for folks that are really willing with an open mind and an open heart and the reality of the situation to get involved. So in a way, that's my reasoning for backing off. Right. Everyone's only got a limited amount of time. And that one really is a doorknob group. You know what I mean? You literally can turn the doorknob, but it ain't opening. I do appreciate the folks that do go out there and, you know, do some commenting. I had talked to one of my really dear friends, Tammy Donaldson, about a group I had started, Without a Roof, Inspire, Mold, and Action. But to start going into these groups and having just responses that you can give that point to the stances of this group that I just started has. So now you're not only kind of getting out the message, but you're not sitting there constantly rehashing stuff in these face groups,
right.
Facebook groups.
You know, the left historically has not done a great job of building coalitions. I don't know why, but if you look at the success of someplace like Chico First, I mean, they've succeeded because they've really built themselves. I mean, they really modeled themselves after Donald Trump mm-hmm. and the America First campaign. You know, get rid of crime, clean up the city, take care of regular folks. But of course, that's the right doesn't have. They don't have the monopoly on that. Those are concerns that affect all of us. Mm-hmm. And so they've pulled together, gosh, 1,500 people into that group since November. We're not doing that, and I don't know why we're failing there.
Well, one thing I would add, I mean, rubbernecker is the one thing. That's a term for people to just slow down and look at the accident, or gawkers or otherwise. But I would be willing to just throw out a number. I mean, if there's 1,500, there probably is not more than 150 that are like physically active in the community. Matter of fact, just from the 2 weeks I'm out there, it seems to be a small group of a dozen or so that are just, you know, whatever you say, they're almost like a little kid. Well, why? Well, this or that. You called me a name. You're like, no, I didn't call you. You know, they try to create this discourse of drama, so you're not really getting anything accomplished. That's been my observation.
That my experience absolutely confirms that mm-hmm. so far. And there may be a point, you know, earlier this week, things got really ugly in one of the conversation threads, and I took a break for a day and really considered whether I want to be involved in this. And frankly, I don't.
This being Gilmore this Anonymous being, Facebook groups and making comments.
Right. And, you know, trying
it's
to...
damaging.
Yeah. I mean, it wears you out.
It's emotionally damaging.
Yeah. I don't know what the right answer is. I'm committed to trying to stick with it for at least a little while longer. Like I said, we don't need to completely change people's minds. But if we just softened their stance so that they weren't so vehemently opposed to the homeless being in public spaces, that would be a good start.
I mean, the homeless are in public spaces because of laws that cast them there, and we continue to create more laws to keep them there. I mean, that's really the abject reality of physically what we're looking at. But the group I actually started, and I'm not looking to be the one that has 1,500 members and only 150 doing anything or being physically active. The idea is it's something that came up out of a group that I was involved with, and still am, just a little bit arm's length, but Insert Food Revolution. But they asked me why I got involved in the group, and I said, I'll use the skills I have. I like to inspire people with their ideas, mold them, figure out what we're going to do, and then action them. But I think we need to do a lot more of that. So I think when I look at the posting I've done, you know, for the 2 weeks kind of testing it out, Angela, I'm going, did I really inspire any of the people I would have was hoping I could educate or soften their stance? No. And actually, I think the people that I could inspire, even if they were on that group, they're not looking at all of these deep threads. It's just a certain amount of people that are out there.
So, yeah.
I mean, what do you think of that concept? I mean, I haven't given you, you know, much detail around it, but action-oriented. I mean, actions define who you are, ultimately.
Yeah, you know, that kind of feeds back into what I loved about Safe Space. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really love that program, and I feel really passionate about it. And one of the big reasons is that it's an action. We didn't solve the problem this winter. We didn't solve the problem last winter, but there was an action. We solved the problem for a night for this group of people, and it was incredibly satisfying, and it's good to feel useful, and it's good to be involved in something where you get some kind of feedback that way, because there are so many other things that you get involved in that you might be looking towards a long-term goal, but you don't get any positives from it in the short term.
Well, it's interesting. I haven't kind of applied this model, you know, the IMA, I call it the IMA model, but from the work I've done in Safe Space, I've actually been involved at different levels since day two, 2013. But I think we do inspire folks, not only the volunteers, but folks experiencing lack of shelter. You know, we listen to their stories. We treat them as humans. We treat them as, you know, egalitarian, and we kind of mold, and then we action things. I mean, there's so many little small things that make up a big part of these people's lives where they'll come in, I need a razor, I need that. Like, oh, so many people asking for razors. So we went out and we got razors, you know. I inspired, I molded, we actioned. We came back, and I gave the guy a razor.
Right.
And he was like blown away. Where'd you get him? So we went and got you a razor. And that so much validated him as a person. He's like, I really needed a razor and you helped me out, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I got a lot of feedback like that too. We had, I mean, I think you're right. We had so many people that came in that were kind of peripherally involved. Maybe they signed up for one shift. And I don't know if you met folks like this, Bill, but I would have somebody come in and they were flabbergasted at what we were doing with this small volunteer group. Mm-hmm. And they said, like, I had one woman that just repeatedly said, but this is all volunteers? like, who's paying for this? And this was somebody that came back the next night, and she brought a busload of socks, a huge bag of socks, because that was one of the things people were asking for. So it really does. I think involvement with that, even if it's not extensive, talk about changing the narrative. I mean, I think it really does enlighten folks and move them to action.
My most recent experience was one of the last days, kind of looking at what Safe Space is doing, has done, and will continue to do. It breaks a lot of stereotypes, because they were told up front, you know, that with the police, I was literally in the thing, they were like laughing, oh, you're going to have homeless people in your car, they're just going to be puking. The past director was really strong, the past director at the Tory shelter, you're going to need armed security. Well, maybe not armed, but you'll need security guards, you need to post them here and there. So when you go into Safe Space, we use a model of just compassionate care and treating people with respect and dignity. And it's just amazing. If you treat people kindly, they react kindly. And it's a big, big thing for them, because they're so used to just being knocked down for, you know, every little thing. But I had one guy, and this is the lead-in, he was sitting at a table, I was eating with him, and he was physically upset. He started going, if this was any other shelter in the United States, this person would be thrown out, and I've been in the shelter system, he should go. And, you know, I wasn't trying to preach, but I said, you know, from what I see and what I've been doing here, sir, for 5 years, I mean, that's part of the problem. I mean, you got people that are homeless, living in a bush, they might have been raped, they might have been assaulted, they might have had all this stuff, and. So they came in and they were a little loud. Well, you know, whoopee-doo, you know. And I think Safe Space has done an amazing job of helping and working through people and accepting who they are. And, you know, I've done enough of these overnights over 5 years, Angela. 99.7% of them fall asleep and then they wake up in the morning. There's no, very few altercations or incidences where we have to throw people out. It happens, but it's very, very rare. And I think we need to look at that more. I know some of the shelter systems here that people are saying they're run like prisons. You know, they have all these different rules and regs. And, you know, if you're an authoritarian, that's perfect. Do we have enough regs? It's only 2 inches thick. Maybe we need 4. I think we need to peel it back to the fact that they're humans and just meet them where they're at. What would you say to them?
I'm with you 100%. I really felt the same way, and I actually had somebody approach me with the same kind of conversation one day. But yeah, mostly I never had to kick out anybody this year.
Not even close.
I know that a few people may have been kicked out during the year, but it was very unusual. And most of the time when situations, if there were situations where people were arguing or getting loud, quietly talking to them solved the situation. I'm not trained in de-escalation. I mean, it was just a human conversation.
Yep.
It just didn't require anything special besides people showing up.
It's interesting. The other story I would share, and it was, I was letting him vent. Casey, one of the ops managers, this is someone that quote unquote had problems with not being ready. But I was still there cleaning up in the morning, Angela, at one of the church, First Christian. And that same guy was just yelling and screaming. But there was no one there. There was only 3 or 4 of us. And if you're in the homeless community, you're used to that. So they're all just like sitting there. But I'm letting him vent. And at the point where I'm like, he's crossed the line, I just literally said to him in a very stern kind of way, look, sir, that's enough. We can't have that here. And you know what he said? He goes, all right, I understand that. Thank you so much. And he didn't say another word. He didn't say another word because he was able to kind of get out that frustration that he had. He felt like he was heard, but then you kind of like, look, here's a boundary. You just crossed it. And we need to do more of that.
Yeah.
We need to do more of that.
I agree. And yeah, it was just so rare to have any issues. And, you know, that's not to say that it's perfect. There were petty debates about things occasionally, but by and large, you're right. I mean, people came there, they had a meal, they were glad to be out of the weather, they were glad to be warm, and they were exhausted and they went to bed.
Maybe a good way to close was a friend of mine, Ed Mayer, who's actually the executive director of the Housing Authority. Really early on, when I got to know him fairly well, the end of like 2013, early 2014, he mentioned, and it's really for recovering addicts, or it's really for people that are in the throes of addiction, but it's called HALT. Hungry, angry, lonely, tired. And it's a discipline. And I want our listeners to just Google that, hungry, angry, lonely, tired, and look at that discipline. That's a discipline that Safe Space, whether they know it or not, are adhering to, is to really help the person get whole. If they're hungry, you give them food. If they're angry, like that one gentleman was angry. And then in a way, I was working with him to get his anger out. He got it out. He was better. Loneliness, that's a tough one. I mean, you can be present for people and talk to them, and you would be amazed at how much difference you make by spending 10 minutes with someone at a safe space table, or tired. And that's the ultimate thing that Safe Space does. They physically give them shelter. But it makes a huge impact on the community, because now you've taken someone that was just, you know, for whatever they're dealing with, Angela, was just ready to explode. And now you've addressed those four basic human needs. And that's what I see the Chico Friends on the Streets doing, and a lot of the work that I do, and many, many others. I mean, what would you say about that concept? And maybe that the first time you heard it.
That is the first time I've heard it, and it's the perfect metaphor for what Safe Face was trying to do. Mm-hmm. It couldn't be better if it had been designed for that. And yeah, you're absolutely right about the loneliness, the frustration that people felt. But gosh, you know, 5 minutes, 2 minutes, a brief conversation with somebody, a lot of time them feeling heard.
Yeah,
was really all that was needed to bring a situation back down. And yeah, Chico Friends on the Street, I think, is doing a great thing, being there with people.
The thing is, to put it into context, you know, the wrong thing to do is someone shows up, they're hungry and they're angry and they're tired and probably lonely, so they're a little bit loud, and then your response is, listen, sir, if you want to have a meal here tonight and you want to sleep here tonight, you just shut up right now or there's the door.
Yeah.
Right? That's the standard model. So then when the person who's in, I don't think people understand how devastating it is to be homeless, walking around with all your stuff and all the things that happen to you. How is that person going to respond?
Yeah.
Probably not in the way that you're looking for, you know? And yeah. I think we've skewed way too far towards this authoritarian, especially, it's stupid. As a process engineer, it's stupid, because you know you're dealing with people that are just in the throes of PTSD and all these other things. You could take the most perfectly healthy person, Angela, and say, you're not going to have a home for a month. And by day 26, but not even that, by the day 26, they have escalated to the point of, oh my God, I just can't wait to get back indoors. So I don't think we treat these people nearly with as much dignity as and kindness as we should, other than, I'm actually going to say other than Safe Space. I think they're a really unique organization, and it's nothing against the rest of the organizations, but I really would like those other organizations to take a look at what Safe Space is doing, because they're really, really successful with it.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, back to that we don't treat them with dignity, with respect, with any kind of appreciation of their circumstances. We're not treating each other that way either. They're
exactly.
They're just mm-hmm. at the bottom of the pile. Societally, we're not handling our interactions with each other well. I don't know where we turn that around, but it's just that it's trickled down, and they, because of their place in the world right now, are getting the worst of it.
Any closing comments?
I mean, get involved where you can. I feel like there's not enough people out there calling out injustice and indignities when they see it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we really need people's voices to be raised. We need to be as vocal as people who are shouting down the people who need help.
So we need as many North State voices as possible.
We do.
Thank you, Angela McLaughlin, for being on the Without a Roof radio program.
Thank you for having me.
You know, I'm here with my friend Eric, and we're talking about a bunch of things, but man, I'll just tell you, before I give him the mic over to him, Eric says to me, you know, if they don't keep chasing us around and not letting us sleep, we're going to get sick. So why don't you take it from there, Eric, and tell our listeners a little bit about your court case yesterday and how much harassment you're facing simply because you have no place to stay.
Well, I have no place to stay, and it's like it's a crime to be homeless, and they just want to throw people in jail for sleeping, you know, in places where it's okay to sleep, and if you don't make a mess and you're out before any company can come there, or even in the back of places and this and that, there's a little awning to stay out of the rain, they find you there, and they're chasing all the homeless around and not letting them sleep anywhere. So what's a man to do? I've been in this town for 27 years, and I'm unfortunately homeless, but I should be able to lay my neck down somewhere, and if I'm not causing any trouble.
When you say they won't let you sleep, who is they?
The police. They pretty much are on it, chasing everybody around. I'm not the only one that's being affected by this. They're chasing us around. Nobody's getting any sleep. And they won't let you put a sleeping bag around you during the day at the parks and stuff. They call it camping. And the parks should be available for anybody who wants to do anything they want there, as long as they're not causing any trouble or doing any drugs or anything like that, or alcohol. You know, it's unfair what they're doing right now, and if they keep it up, there's going to be a lot of sick homeless people, you know, and the sickness could spread to the people they so-called are, have places. It could become a plague all of a sudden.
So just as a context, I'm actually sitting here with Eric. It's about noon, and you were catching some Z's before I came over because you weren't able to sleep at night. So when you see people sleeping in the park during the day, why don't you walk up and find out what their story is? This person wasn't able to even have a reasonable night's sleep last night because he was being harassed and pushed all over town. Tell us a little bit about your living arrangements due to this whole failure to appear, Eric.
Yeah, I had a shopping cart ticket, and I had a lot of problems this last year, and I guess I missed a court date, and then I missed another one. But then when it became warrant, I realized that that it had to be taken care of, and I said I won't be missing any more court dates, and I had to, you know, I had to make out a new court date for me and make sure I was there. But due to two failure appears on a shopping cart ticket, which I had my stuff in a shopping cart just temporarily in front of a Walgreens store. Walgreens knew I even had the cart in that. But they going to make me do 10 days in jail for that and 3 years probation and a bunch of fines.
What is the 10 days for? Actually stealing the cart or failure to appear or both?
For all the offenses that they, you know, they dropped one, I guess, failure to appear and kept one failure to appear in a shopping cart ticket, and that was enough to give me 10 days in jail.
Did the person who claimed the shopping cart was stolen, did they show up for court?
No, they did not. They weren't there. I was there by myself with a public defender, which had everything arranged, but I didn't even have time to talk with her before court. She just had everything arranged, like, this is what's going to happen.
But not only weren't they there, but did they have anything in the paperwork that the lawyer must have had for the charges that said this is a complaint that's been filed by Walgreens because you stole their cart?
Well, it wasn't filed by Walgreens. I don't even know who it was. The police that came up on me, and I don't think there was any complaint filed. It's just a shopping cart. I had my stuff in it, but I don't think there was any complaint filed at all. They didn't mention anybody like that.
Would you be willing to have me help you a little bit, look into that case and maybe have an attorney as well, kind of, you know, see, you know, what that situation was and kind of, you know, validate my strong assumption that no one actually placed a claim on a cart being stolen, that you were just basically, you know, charged and convicted due to a lack of good representation. And anyone out there that's listening, this is Gamble Mash Without a Roof radio program with my friend Eric. But would you be willing to do that, Eric?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know what can be done now after the case has been closed and I was sentenced. So... But I think 3 years probation, court probation is pretty hectic, because what if I wanted to leave this town because of the harassment and all that? They're keeping me here to torture me? That doesn't sound right at all. I don't even know if I could leave this state and go to another state without having them extradite me back on a violation of probation, court probation. Then they would give me more time.
So you're like caught in this vicious cycle simply because you had no place to sleep or store your stuff.
That's right. It's like... I was picked on. There's a lot of people doing the same thing, and it's like they're just going at random, just picking one here, one there, and not, you know, if they're gonna make this law the way it is, they should, you know, find, you know, they should make it so everybody's getting the same effect of this, not just a few people, individuals.
Thank you for your time, Eric. Any closing comments?
Not really. I'm real tired, so it was hard for me to even do this interview because I didn't get any sleep last night with the cops chasing me around everywhere I go. It's like I can't sleep anywhere. I think I find a place that's okay and this and that and out of the way, and they find me and wake me up and say I can't sleep there.
This is Gamble Mash with Keontae out here at the Plaza with Dave Phillips and Scott Rushing, helping people with food and fellowship. But she's going to give us a little insight on her viewpoint of the homeless situation in Chico and what we need to do to remedy it. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. I just want to say, you know, I come from a large city. I come from Los Angeles County, the San Fernando Valley. I grew up watching Skid Row, watching the Godfather hand out dollar bills to everyone on Skid Row during the holidays. Moving to Chico and seeing how small this community is and how much power we have in this community to fix the social injustices of the community and to see as many homeless people as we have without homes is ridiculous. It is quite ridiculous. Los Angeles County is a very large place with lots of homeless. However, the problem is not solved there, but the problem can be solved here in Chico, our tiny home. I support CHAT, Chico Housing Action Team. I support Simplicity Village, and I cannot wait to see the changes that are to come with that initiative.
The 1 year without justice for Desmond Phillips gathering at the Chico Women's Club had dozens of hamburgers and hot dogs left over that were given out with fellowship and kind words at Chico Downtown Plaza on a picture-perfect St. Patrick's Day 2018 by Scott Rushing, the father of Tyler Rushing, who was killed in an officer-involved shooting in July of 2017, and David Phillips, who too lost his son Desmond to an officer-involved shooting a year ago today.
I couldn't be happier to be here today on St. Patrick's Day and sharing some food with hungry people here at the plaza in Chico, California. Couldn't be happier.
It was a pleasure, man. I love coming down here doing this. This is something that my son has started with me, as everyone knows. And it was just an all-out good event today. It was a good turnout for Desmond Phillips, 1 year celebration of life. And all these beautiful brothers and sisters out here, I'm gonna just continue to come out here and show my love and get the love back.
It was a few minutes ago, the Phillips Memorial ended, and it was well attended. The 1 year anniversary of Desmond's killing here in Chico. And I came up from Ventura to support the Phillips family. Most of you know, most of the listeners of this program will know, my son Tyler Rushing was killed just a few weeks after Desmond was killed by the same group of shooters, plus a security guard in my son's case. And it was a very nice gathering. It was a very moving gathering, very emotional. And because of all the extra food and love and support there, we had some extra food. We didn't want it to go to waste. So I was with some help from friends. We were able to get the food down here and feed some people that are hungry.